What is up, everybody? It is Drew, and only Drew, as I'm here to talk one of my favorite ever Nintendo consoles, the Nintendo 64. It is a brisk Sunday morning, February 6th. John is off, God knows doing what, and maybe we'll hear from him a little bit later. But today it's about me. It's about me. You know, John's been doing all of these retro, like I said, mob, you know, meetups in Denver. He's been doing his own top NES and Super NES. I said, you know what? Shit, it's time for me to step in the spotlight, you know, earn the paycheck, give John a weekend off, and talk some video games. And what better video games to talk than Nintendo 64? Yes. But before we get into that, we have some housekeeping to do. You know, we gotta do the little, you know, cleanups. So I will say, we want to give a big shout out and thank you to everybody that partook in the January Apple and Podchaser reviews. Huge help, really goes us a long way. I mean, we got a tremendous amount of people. So thank you. So what we did was everyone that entered or wrote a review for us, we put you into a little bit of lottery. You guys know the rules. And one random winner was going to win $20 eShop credit. I mean, sounds like a no-brainer. You know, takes 1 to 2 minutes of your time, and you could win. The winner of the January review is Matt's Power. Congratulations. His $20 eShop card was already assigned and given out to him. But the beauty about all of this, guys, is not only do we have to hear from you, you know, get that awesome feedback, not only do you get to, you know, talk about and promote your favorite podcast, but we do this every single month. So if you didn't win January, no big deal, because it's February, folks, and now we're doing this again for February. Since it was our first one, we did the $20. Every month will now be $10, but still, I mean, 1 to 2 minutes for a possible $10 eShop credit? Seems like a no-brainer. So all you need to do is go back into Apple, go back to Podchaser, and just rewrite a review, change it up a little bit. And what it will do is it will kind of reissue that with a new date, so we'll see it. So we'll know if you guys did that or not. Simple. Go do it. Next on the housekeeping list, open bounties. The bounty board is in action still. There's only one bounty still out there, which means we might have to have another one sooner or later. But the current bounty is in Pocket Dungeon. You need to beat the game with King Knight, which is a full run. It unlocks an achievement. That's all I know. Never played the game. This was John's baby here, but from what I hear, it's pretty difficult. So go out there and do that. I mean, I don't know how much the game is, but give it a go. I heard it's a good game. Try it out. Beat the game, King Knight, and that will get yourself a $10 eShop card. The first person that can do that, best of luck to you. Monthly Mayhem, we just wrapped up Mario Kart 64. And pretty, you know, pretty funny we talked about that because, again, we're here talking about Nintendo 64 today. So that is wrapped up. That was a fun time. We had 9 participants. We did the little time trials, and that wrapped into the bracket mode. And the winner of Monthly Mayhem with a $15 eShop card is the Ninformant, who also recently got the M&M bounty, so touche to him. And then the random lottery ball. So, guys, we always promote this. The point of the random lottery is all you need to do is partake in this, and you could win. It doesn't matter if you win, you lose. And this month was a perfect example. The person that finished in last place is the person that won the random lottery. I love you to death, buddy. I don't mean any disrespect to the last place, but Chris HL94 is a $10 eShop card for just playing Mario Kart. There's no competitiveness to it. You just play the game. You enjoy it. Who cares? And look what happened. He won. Good for him. Congratulations. Stay tuned for what our next Monthly Mayhem game will be. We're still developing that, coming through that. We'll let you know as soon as we come up with it. Last bit of housekeeping I needed to go through was we need to give a shout out at a dear friend of ours, another fellow podcasted, Retro Logic Podcast. Myself and John will be on there tomorrow, February 7th, for that's right, folks, episode 69. I mean, what better way to talk about retro gaming? on episode 69 of the RetroLogic podcast. So go ahead, keep an eye on their feed. We'll let you guys know once that episode comes live, but we will be going on there tomorrow night to talk some retro gaming and, you know, probably bring in a lot of Dads After Dark theme. I'm going to have to go talk to Dan over there and find out what the, you know, what the rating is over there, because I'm going to be dropping fucking F-bombs like it's my day job. Who knows? Got to make sure I control myself. So I think that's it. That's it for the housekeeping. But now, the Nintendo 64. What makes the Nintendo 64 so magical, right? You know, and is it really magical? Because if you think about it, for me, myself, it was really my first ever Nintendo system. And a quick little history story on how that happened was, is, you know, I'm not going to lie, I had had an NES, but I was kind of younger during the NES days, so I never, like, had one. Actually, I think my parents had one, and it was more of me watching them play and kind of jumping in a little bit here and there, but it was later in life when I picked up the NES and really dug into it. So after the NES, right, Super NES, Sega time frame, well, my grandmother, God rest her soul, what a beautiful woman, she ended up one Christmas Eve buying all of her grandkids a Sega Genesis. And God, what am I going to say? No thanks. No thanks, Graham. You know, I mean, I took it. That was like my first ever system. You know, it was mine. I had a Sega Genesis. I was pumped. I was thrilled. So you're not going to push back on her, right? So I kind of missed that Super Nintendo era and really jumped on the Sega bandwagon for the time being. But then got a little bit older. You know, had a little part-time gig at the golf course, saving some money. And then you hear about this three-dimensional Nintendo system on the horizon, right? So I was like, oh my God, I need to get my hands on this. And did you know that the original code name was called Project Reality? So Project Reality, name of the N64, they actually were going to call it the Ultra 64. What do you think about that? Ultra 64 versus the Nintendo 64. I mean, it's obviously nice to have the Nintendo brand in the name of a console, but Ultra 64, not sure. Project Reality, interesting. That's kind of like when, you know, they originally had the NX titled, and, you know, they always do that code name so they're not giving anything too much away. You know, think about the Switch. If they had, if they didn't have a code name for the Switch, you know, the Switch itself, the name could kind of been, you know, if that got out there, it kind of gives a little bit of, you know, I guess you could say, debunks the rumor, right? It kind of spoils the fun. So the funny thing about the Nintendo 64 is that it obviously came out, I believe, in September of 1996. However, they say the actual system was done, completed, fully manufactured by the mid-1995. However, the problem was, is they did not have the software lineup to go with it, specifically Mario 64. So what happened was, you know, you had the summer 1995, everyone is getting excited, it was supposed to come out, it gets delayed, December 1995. December comes, game still is not done. So what do they do? Push it back to April. April 1996 now. Fuck, you know, we want this system. Sorry guys, Mario 64 still isn't ready. Push it out to June. So now it's 1 year delayed. Everyone's again super excited, and what happens? They miss the June date, and they push it back all the way to the date that we are now know and fond of, September of 1996, and all because of the little mustache bastard from Mario 64. I mean, was it worth the wait? Yeah, you know, I think it was, because look at today's world, right? We look at, you know, PlayStation 5 and the Xbox series. Well, Xbox not as bad. PlayStation 5. They released the console. But where's the games? Where's the software? Right? What does that do? Does it make people not want to buy the system? Does it make people buy another system? Because, you know, it's tricky. So was this a smart play by Nintendo? You know, again, almost 15, 20 years ago, 25 years. Yeah, I mean, yeah, maybe it was. So who knows? But the Nintendo 64 system itself, interesting choice with the cartridges that they had. They say the cartridges was actually a pain in the butt for a lot of developers. Kind of expensive. But I don't know. They were pretty freaking sturdy. I'll give them that. I mean, a lot of the older cartridges were super sturdy. I mean, just think of as a kid what you used to do to those things. I mean, hell. John, close your ears. But I think we've all used to put a little bit. I remember the old school NES cartridges. You couldn't get them to work. I used to put a little bit of warm water in there, and you'd shake it up a little bit, and you kind of blow out it, and it fucking worked. Call me crazy. But yeah, you just needed a drop of little warm water. Then you blew in the cartridge like you always did, and bam, the sucker kicked it into overdrive. I don't know why. Probably now that I look back at it, not the brightest idea, missing water with electronics, but it worked. I don't ask questions. Anyways, soapbox there. The colors and variations, I think we all owned, maybe not the actual console, but with it, but all at one point we all owned the colored see-through controllers. I know I had the lime green. What an amazing idea. I mean, that was the first time you really got like an inner glimpse into what a console was, what it looked like on the inside, the motherboard, the electronics of it. It was just, you know, awesome. I remember also I had the like bright orange. That one wasn't the see-through. That was just a solid orange controller as well. But again, it's nice to see all the variations of colors on a console or controller when, you know, most of your livelihood, you kind of had just a black or gray controller. So this was really nice to see kind of a customized feel when you went to someone's house or a friend was over, you know, they fought over which color they want, that lime green one, that looks cool. Or, you know, it's almost everybody's console looks a little bit different. Loved it. And speaking of the controller, I mean, it also had such accessories and variation that came with it, right? So you had the rumble pack, brand new feature, very cool. First time you see that controller shaking in your hand, I mean, amazing. You had an additional memory card slot that you can now put into the controller again. Very unique for its time. Very nice that you could have an additional backup rather than the onboard memory, because again, a lot of the games might not have that. A lot of passwords utilize features and things like that. Then we had, for the console, we had the expansion pack. So what the expansion pack did, if you don't remember, there was that little slot in the front of it, where you had to open it up and you could take out the actual like RAM of the console. And it increased that RAM from 4 megabytes to 8 megabytes. And we said to ourselves, oh my God, 4 8 megabytes, you know, compared to nowadays. But back then, that was a huge improvement. It allowed you to increase frame rate, allowed a lot of co-op games, which we'll get to in a minute. But it really did make a difference. And maybe, you know, it's not like it went from standard definition to HD, but it allowed a game to play smoother. And I think that was the key takeaway that made a lot of these games, again, co-op friendly. The last accessory I want to talk about is the transfer pack. It allowed you to put actual Game Boy and Game Boy Color games into the controller. I mean, think about that for a second. I mean, I know you could do it in the past with, I think, what, the Super Nintendo had one. But wow, you can now bring these Game Boy games that you're taking on the go and bring them onto your home console. I mean, sounds quite familiar with the system we have nowadays, right? So, it's, you know, again, genius play here. You know, and it's funny because the Nintendo 64 does have so many memories that reside with me. And I'm not going to lie, I was that kid, you know, living in the mom's basement playing video games a lot. And a lot of those memories, you know, I tie into my neighbor, my friends, my brother. We played so many games together, which when you think about it, the N64, the reason why I think it was so successful and so awesome is because it was truly a couch co-op system, right? It was the first system to really integrate up to 4 players, right? There's nothing better than I remember playing 4-player Mario Party, right? And we're all blistering our hands with the controller joystick when you're trying to go around. I mean, I remember that so bad. I used to go to school the next day, and, you know, the kids were like, oh, so you've been playing Mario Party over the weekend. Oh, yeah, you know, blah, 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 blah. And it just made that awesome, again, more connection of talking and playing. You know, I can remember so many memories of my brother playing and throwing the controllers. He was much different than I was. He didn't take losing well. But I remember this one time we used to play it so much in the summer that, you know, my mom would go to work, leave us home for the summer, for the day while she went to work. And she was like, you know, no video games today. I want you guys to go outside and play. She's like, I mean it. I want you to go outside and play. So we're like, okay, we'll go outside and play. So there was this time we got a bunch of extension cords. We set up one of those like canopy tents, you know, nothing crazy, like the little ones. We set one of those up in the backyard. We unplugged the TV. We dragged the TV outside, got all the extension cords. We got some beach chairs. We fucking played Nintendo 64 outside in the backyard. It was amazing. It was amazing until my mom came home. Then it was not so much amazing. I actually think she took the Nintendo 64 for quite some time from us. But those are the memories Nintendo 64 does, because it's that co-op. And it's not the co-op of just two players. It's the co-op of having four buddies playing together in the same room and truly defined that multiplayer experience. And I'll get into that in a lot of my top 10 in a minute, when what that means and how that interacts. And you'll see most of my top 10 games are multiplayer games because of that specific reason. But yeah, the Nintendo 64 to me is that co-op system, which has so many memories. But yeah, overall, love the system. I still have the system. I love that they added the expansion pass to the Switch, right, online. I think that's great. I'm continuing to see all these games that I want to keep playing. I just played through the entirety of Paper Mario. Amazing. But it does make you wonder, right? I mean, there are certain games that don't hold up. The camera angles, again, we all know that is to be tricky, right? Because, again, they weren't designed for that in the past. That wasn't the plan. It wasn't the vision. It was kind of, again, their first go around, the introduction of how they were going to introduce that. But they hold up. I don't know. It's hard to say. I think certain games hold up better than others. But I think Mario 64, for example, is still a fantastic game with fantastic, level design and collectathon and all of that. It's a pretty large game when you think about it. Underwater, flying, you know, running around and jumping. I think it's an amazing, amazing game. Whether it holds up or not from a visual point of view, sometimes you just see past that, you know, you do, and it's tricky. And I don't think so much the graphics bother me. I think the controller and the camera can be the more difficult part, especially after nowadays how we have such a fluid double joystick. So I think that's where people get held up more than visually. I think you can see past the visual. If you can play old school retro games, I think you can see past, you know, the polygon shapes. Personally, for me, it's the controllers, I think, that get a little bit tricky for the N64. They were very unique for that time. All right, enough me reminiscing on the Nintendo 64, providing me a little information. Hope you guys enjoyed the history lesson, some of my fond memories. But now it's time for the top 10. And before we start the top 10, I think John can't sit out. Let's be honest, guys. It was probably heartbreaking when I told John I was doing this episode. He's like, well, what about me? What am I going to do? I need to provide my top 10. So here's a little word from John on John's Nintendo 64's top 10.
Hey, Drew, so excited you are doing your top 10 N64 games of all time. You know, there's a vicious rumor out there that I do not like the N64, but that's not true. The N64 is perhaps my favorite Nintendo home console of all time. A lot of people just don't know that about me. And so I wanted to give you my top 10 N64 games of all time. So here we go. Number 10, Triangle Strategy. Because that's basically what all these N64 games are. Just a bunch of triangles. Sometimes even a few at a time. Number 9 is This Was Better in 2D. Certainly I loved this game in 2D. And it was a lot better in 2D. Number 8, I Wish I Had a PlayStation, actually. Because this game is better there. Number 7, Genki Wrestling. What system had better, horrible-looking wrestling games than the N64? Nobody, that's who. Number 6, definitely not Metroid. Number 5, oh, this is a good one. I'll never forget this, especially on Christmas Day. It's, oh crap, I need the expansion pack? Number 4, my hand has blisters now. Number 3, and I still own this, complete in box, pretty minty too. It is This electric rat has no idea what I'm saying, does he? My number two favorite N64 game of all time is that one game with the cursing squirrel I hear about, but I forget the name. And my favorite N64 game of all time, easily, is, geez, this was my favorite game as a kid, but it looks like garbage now. Anyway, hopefully our lists have some overlap and match, but very excited for you, and let's go N64.
Okay, I mean, I think we all know what he did there, right? I think there was no error. You did not hear any games. I think the games he described, we all know what he means. We've all played those type of games on the N64. Some of them might be specific. Some of them might be a little bit broad. But touche, good effort. Thanks for the feedback. Interesting how you did it there. I enjoyed it. So with that being said, let's lead into Drew's top 10 Nintendo 64 games. All right. You guys know the rules, right? The rules have always been no Mario games, no Zelda games. Because simply that would take over most of the top 10. And we want to share the games that weren't those big blockbuster games of Nintendo and what other ones that we really, really enjoy and have fun with. Because if I had to pick Mario, I'll tell you right up front, Paper Mario would probably be my favorite Nintendo 64 game. From a Mario point of view and from a Zelda point of view, I mean, really, just the two options, I'd probably go Ocarina, even though I love the uniqueness of Majora's. So fun, so different. Another collectathon with the mass and the different abilities and the time cycles. Again, very unique. And bluntly, I fucking love Skull Kid, to be honest. So, all right. Anyways, Sadie, kick us off.
Number 10.
Vigilante 8. Man, what a fun game this used to be. Again, show up. If you don't know what this game is, you most likely know what Twisted Metal is. Twisted Metal is, think of, best way to describe it for everyone to understand, Mario Kart Battle Mode. Mario Kart Battle Mode, but with unique cars. And, you know, you just, again, you're trying to destroy each other with weapons. But what made this game a lot of fun, too, was they had a really interesting story-driven campaign mode. And it was kind of interesting. It was about, I think, something to do with, like, an oil rage. And to be honest, I don't fully remember it. But the characters that you got to pick from, the different cars, really, had a unique story that also tied into the main campaign mode. So it was like an overarching story, and each character had their own unique take on that story and went along with it. And each, obviously, character had different weapons, different cars, and different approaches to playing the game. And then, again, you also could do a co-op version of the story mode, which also made it a lot of fun. And then, lastly, the team battle mode, death matches mode, which is, again, so much fun. All these games are so much fun when you're just battling it out for no reason. I could probably go on and on with Vigilante 8. With more in-depth descriptions of the characters and the courses, but I'll leave that for some of the other games, a little bit more more fun, I would say. So, Vigilante 8 is my number 10.
Number 9.
Venture Racing!
Beetle Adventure Racing. Wow, this is going to be a reoccurring theme, guys. You're going to see a lot of racing games. And I don't know why, but racing games for the N64 for me is what made the N64 so amazing. Beetle Adventure Racing was an arcade-style racer, but with all Volkswagen Beetles. That's as simple as that. What made this game very unique was the voice acting. There was voice acting in this game, which had some amazing random sayings and clips. In fact, here's some right now.
Baby. Nasty. That's cold, baby. Dynamite. That's gotta hurt. You bet. Oh, yeah. Hail to the king, baby. You're bumping with the flavor now. Groovy.
So some of those things happened throughout the game. Every time you collected something, every time on the start menu, you would hear these amazing voice acting clips. And the courses themselves is what also made this game so much fun, so much unique courses. I remember there was like a Jurassic Park type level. It was a ripoff. You would go directly through like the Jurassic Park gate. You would go through the jungle. The T-Rex would come out and try to bite your car and hit you. A lot of them had hidden shortcuts and areas to explore. The funny part was there was actually shortcuts that were longer. So it wasn't actually a shortcut, but you would get to explore these super unique paths. And again, they'd really tie into the course designs, which again, just made it so much fun because in any game, I love the exploration. That's always my favorite of any type of game. And you'd say, well, how would you want to explore in a car racing game or any type of racing game? I don't know. I still like to see what the design of the track looks like, what the developers and designers were thinking of when they designed this, and also all the little intricate, you know, features and details that they put into, again, a racetrack where if you're just on the hidden, you know, the straight path, you're not really looking off of those. So I find that super interesting, super cool. But what made this racing game also was a little unique is they had these boxes. So think of, again, I'm going to use Mario Kart a lot tonight as examples. Think of the boxes that they would have in Mario Kart. Sure, this game had the weapons where you could get the missiles and the, you know, the mines and stuff like that, the drop. But they also had points. So they had these point they're actually crates. They were like wooden crates. And they had these points. You know, there'd be 2 points, 5 points. I think if you went off like the hidden path, you might even find like a 20-pointer if it's really hard to find. And you wanted to collect points throughout the level as well as finish in a good place because you would need a certain amount of points to advance to the next race. I forget what it was. For some reason, I want to say it was like 50 points. And again, I don't remember, you know, I might get like 10 points to finish in first. So if that was the case, you'd have to find 40 points throughout the course. You could technically finish in first, I think, and not advance if you didn't collect enough points. And again, I don't know what the point system was, but if you collected all of the points again in the level, so there's an incentive, you would unlock other like battle arena courses, which again leads me to battle arena. Again, Mario Kart battle arena type atmosphere style where you're fighting each other bug, but this one was different. Rather than just having 3 balloons on your cart, the premise of battle mode in this game was to collect 6 ladybugs. There were 6 different color ladybugs throughout the map, and you had to collect them all. And it was even cooler. Once you collected them all, you had to get to the like an exit. You couldn't just collect the last one and be done. So there's a little bit of strategy in which ones you left and which one you didn't collect yet, so you could get the last one and just leave and exit. But meanwhile, you have your other opponents, you know, driving around, blowing you up, you know, and trying to kill you as well. So what a fun thing. There was also some unlockables. I remember there was an alien car, which was really cool. I mean, it was a bug, again, Volkswagen Beetle with alien style on it, you know, and there was like an alien would talk while he was driving it type thing. You know, we come in peace. But there's also a police car Beetle. And the cool thing about the police car Beetle was it was pretty much a cheat code because if you use the police car in the races, all the other cars would pull over. Like they thought they were getting pulled over. So you should just be going and all these other contestants and opponents are just pulling over. It was amazing. It was, again, it wasn't quite fair, but Beetle Adventure Racing was definitely one of those games that just kept on giving, kept on exploring, kept on giving you unlockables to look for. And again, a lot of fun. This wasn't so much as a big co-op game for me. This is more of a campaign mode, but one of those things where you're sitting with a buddy playing and you're taking turns and, oh no, there's the shortcut coming up here, or get the, you know, make sure you get that hidden block, or a lot of that stuff to try to help each other out. So that's why, again, number 9 for me is Beetle Adventure Racing.
Number 8.
Man, one of the best soundtracks out of all the N64 games. And if you haven't recognized it, it is Tony Hawk Pro Skater. The first one, folks. Because, man, you gotta think about this. Back when this game came out, Tony Hawk was 31 years old, had tons of championships. Everybody knew his name. Everyone knew who Tony Hawk was. It was one of those things like Mike Tyson, you know, Even if you didn't watch boxing, you knew the name Mike Tyson back in the day. Same thing, well, you know the name today too for a lot of other reasons, but Tony Hawk was just one of those things. People knew the name. So even if you weren't a big skater, and hey, here's a little teaser for you. I actually was a skater, not a skateboarder, but I was a rollerblader. Glimpse into the history of Drew there. Never really talked about that. I'll have to talk about it one day. I have a lot of good stories on that too. But yeah, anyway, Tony Hawk Pro Skater was such an amazing game. Again, the soundtrack, collectathon. I remember you had to collect all of the letters that spelled out skate. And if you did that, you'd get additional lockables. You started to learn about some of these other pro skaters. I'll be honest, I was never a Tony Hawk guy when I played this game. I always went for Bobby Burntwist, baby. Bobby Burntwist, he was the man. And then you unlockable skateboards, I think outfits you got as well. And then they had the co-op mode. They had amazing co-op modes where you'd have a time frame where you could just do as many tricks as you could, and you know, the higher person wins. But all of you remember they had a horse mode. And I'm trying to remember. I think it was like you'd start at one point, like the same point, and player A would go first, do a trick, maybe a grind, and jump off and do some type of like, you know, 360 ollie or something. And then player B had to, I think, match it. And if they didn't match it or do more points, then they would get, you know, the H or the O, and then, you know, a typical game of horse. So this game had a lot of diversity too, and again, it goes back to that collectathon of trying to find the letters and exploring and trying to get the best tricks. And even the diversity of the levels, right? Some of the levels were fun where, what was it? You had like the downhill level where it was just continuous downhill. So you couldn't really go back versus some of the other levels like the mall, which were just kind of an open world type exploration for your 3 minutes or whatever it was. Really cool. A lot of fun. I remember everyone was always trying to unlock, what was that last level? Was it Area 51? Was that the first game? I'm sure someone will correct me if I'm wrong, but there was just tons of stuff like that. You're trying to unlock the next level and trying to nail that 1080 or whatever it might be. Lots of fun. So again, number 8, Tony Hawk Pro Skater.
Number 7.
I mean, did you really think I was going to get through this list without mentioning some type of fighting game? And what better fighting game than WWF WrestleMania 2000? Because again, like I said about Tony Hawk, which kid growing up in the 90s did not watch WWF, WWE, whatever the hell you want to call it? We all knew it. I mean, that was a generation of, again, wrestlers, right, that are still, you know, dominant in the world. I mean, look at The Rock, right, Triple H, Undertaker, Stone Cold Steve Austin. I mean, the list go on and on, but these are people that are still trying to, you know, either in the movie world or still in the wrestling world, believe it or not. And just to see that transform into the game was amazing. Never mind the actual cartridge itself, the black cartridge with that lime neon green text, you know, WrestleMania and the nice big 2000. So right off the bat, before you even put this game in, it was speaking to you, right? And then the game itself, I mean, you wanted to play all these wrestlers because again, you're watching them on TV and then you know that they have all their unique special moves, which again, their finishing moves and stuff like that. It was so iconic for that character. You wanted to pull it off, and the game itself was just smooth. I mean, I remember the grappling and throwing them against the ropes and trying to, you know, do a move or whatever it might be. But then you had the diversity of the matches, right? You had the cage match and the table matches and the ladder matches, and you had the road to WrestleMania and your Royal Rumbles. It was just so much fun that there was so much different ways to play the game. It just made it that much more exciting, that much more fun. And again, you'd have to play the characters that, like, you know, I remember like Doink the Clown wasn't a big guy in WF, but it was fun playing with him because you have to always pick him. So again, WrestleMania 2000 was a hit. Again, everyone was kind of playing it and watching it and playing it in the 90s. So it was a lot of fun.
Number 6. I love girls with big fat titties. I love girls with deep vaginas. Come on down to South
Park and meet some friends of mine. So we talked about everyone watching wrestling in the 90s. Well, what comes along with every kid doing in the 90s? Watching South Park. So South Park 64 has to be on this list at number 6 because, let's be honest, not only was it amazing and fun to watch these cartoon characters that you now controlled in a video game swear at each other and call them fucking shitheads, and you know, it was just so iconic that you love the show and now you're controlling them and you're seeing it. And again, there's that something about being like, again, hey John, I know you might have been a little bit older here, but at this almost quite teenager years, you know, that tween slash young teenager, like a little bit of a rebel that, you know, your parents probably don't know what you're playing or watching. And now you're playing this game and they're swearing and they're doing inappropriate things. And it's just like, it's that little bit of rebelness, right? And they did have a lot of bad language and a lot of bad quotes. I mean, it's such a giddy thing that when you start the game off, every time you move, you know, the Joy-Con or D-pad in the menu, every option you move to is a fart noise. So you start off the game with just giggling and laughing until it's like, fart, 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 fart. It's like, yeah, I'm in. And then when you start the first level, you have all these fucking turkeys running everywhere with the... And it's just amazing, right? And it... The game was not easy and it was not hard. There was a perfect balance. But some of my favorite memories of this game were the weapons. And it's funny, you know, as now adults, we always have nostalgia about a lot of things we did in life, whether it was old movies or video games we played. And we use a lot of quotes and stuff like that from our history, right? And we just use it in everyday life with our friends. And this game actually today still has like quotes that I see me saying to my friends and stuff because we have those memories shared together. And there'll be more of that I talked about later on of other games as well. But the weapons in this game were fantastic. I don't know if you remember, but the weapons all had like a normal mode and like a strong mode. I don't know what you would call it. I remember you had to push the D down pad and it would switch. And the first one I remember was, so you started with the basic snowball. That was your weapon, right? The basic weapon, you had a snowball and you'd throw it at the turkeys. But if you pushed the down one, you would actually hear you unzipper your pants, you take the piss, and now your snowball's yellow. And it's like stronger. Like the little details of just you hearing the zipper on your pants and pissing on the snowball, it's kind of next level when you think about a game that's 25 years old. It's awesome. It's fun. And again, it's giddy. I remember the other one when you had the Terrence and Philip little dolls, and they were fart bombs, right? They would legit throw them at somebody, and it would create like a cloud of smoke of fart, and it would be like poison. They're losing their health. And then I think if you switch the down one to like Philip, it was it might have been like a proximity type mine. Like they had to walk by it, and it would go off. And I remember, again, the distinct clips of, oh, I think I farted. Like, that's what they, like, when they throws it, like that's what they, oh, I'm going to fart on you. Like, it was just a stupid South Park comedy. But I'm going to say the best weapon in this game. No, it's not the cow launcher. Remember, the cow launcher was amazing. The cow launcher was an automatic death. If you found that thing, you shot it, it went up in the air, the cow landed on the guy's head, and he like couldn't walk, and all of a sudden it would smush him. Great weapon. But the best weapon, maybe the best video game weapon ever? John, mark that down. We need to do a top 10 video game weapons episode. I want to do that. This will probably win, so maybe I shouldn't. But the best weapon in this game was the alien dancing gun. What this did was, if you shot somebody, no matter what they were doing, they would stop what they're doing and start dancing. But the best part about it was the song that they had to sing. So here's a clip.
Oh, when I get that feeling, I gotta sing. When I get that feeling, when I get that feeling,
I mean, if that's not the catchiest video game gun song you've ever heard, I don't know what to tell you. Then you have no soul, because it is amazing. I still sing that today with my buddies and stuff. Like, it's just fun. It's catchy. It's South Park, The game was fantastic. It was hard story mode. Don't even get me going on the deathmatch mode, which again, held up. It held up compared to all of its, you know, predecessors in these online deathmatch modes. The game was great. And you throw in the South Park charm in there, that's why it's number six. That's why it's on my rankings.
Number five.
Snowboarding Kids 2. You know, I had a lot of thought about this after I did my rankings and stuff. I said, does this game deserve to be number five? And I don't know. Maybe I marked it a little too bit low. I think it definitely deserves to be on my list. But the reason why this game is so good, again, going back to that Mario Kart formula. It's Mario Kart, but snowboarding. And instead of, you know, you're going on a track, you're going down some type of mountain or hill. So the cool part was, is when you got to the bottom of the hill, the race wasn't over. You had to get on the ski lift, go back up, and do another lap, right? Because no races are just one lap. So it was pretty unique. It was pretty cool. Snowboarding Kids 2 introduced a lot of new elements to the game. Some say 1's better. I always thought 2 was better. They introduced a little bit more of diversity in the tracks. So not only are you just on a snowy mountain now, you're in the jungle one level. I think they're kind of like on a beach in one level. They shrink you down into like a toy room type thing one level. So it's a little bit more diversity. What I also love is they introduce boss races. So I remember in the snow level, for example, there was a giant snowman. And as you went down the mountain again, you had to collect your bombs and your missiles. And the snowman was throwing snowballs at you that you were trying to dodge as you went down the mountain. But then you had to also attack him at the same time. Then the jungle level, you had to fight a T-Rex and he was laying like eggs and you had to avoid him. Just really, really cool, unique boss levels like that. Imagine like a Mario Kart game where, you know, there's a giant, I don't know, Bowser robot and you're going around the track trying to fight him. You know, kind of cool. I think that maybe you have to kill him before he finishes the three laps or something, you know. It's just a different take on, again, types of games that have been done over and over again with this battle cart type style. Their music was fantastic. Some say, again, 1 was better music, but I enjoyed the music. It was catchy. That's all you need. Also, since it was a snowboarding game, anytime you went off a jump of some sort, you could do tricks. And doing tricks would get you, I think, coins as well as picking up coins on the map. But I think coins, then you could go back to, you know, after the race and you could buy new upgrades. You could buy, you know, new boards, the new outfits, things along that line. So a lot of fun, as well as you had different characters to choose from. And then the items themselves, they did a pretty unique job. I liked a lot of their items, just like I liked a lot of their weapons in South Park. I remember one item you could pick up was a snowman. And if you threw the snowman at another character, he would legit turn into a snowman and not be able to control his board. So whatever direction he was heading, he just continues that direction until they hit a wall. Or falls off the cliff, or falls in lava, or falls in the ice. So it was cool, a little bit different. You know, they tried to introduce different weapons to make it fun and make it unique. And I think they did a really good job at that. And again, I think the game styles were fun, energetic, fast-paced, and a lot of collectibles. Again, it goes back to that collectathon. That's what a lot of these older games did so well, is that you wanted to keep playing them. Because it was a good repeatability, that you could keep playing them. So again, that's number five, Snowboarding Kids 2.
Number four.
Jet Force Gemini 1999. What else were you doing besides playing Jet Force Gemini? By Rare Studios. These people knew what they were doing. Third-person shooter. You're running around. You're a military-type space, you know, jet force. And you're killing bugs. What does that remind you of, folks? I'll tell you exactly what it reminds you of. It reminds you of the 1997 film Starship Troopers. You know, Neil Patrick Harris, before it was Neil Patrick Harris. Any teenager in the 90s know this movie, because this is this may be like the first movie I saw like a set of boobies, maybe besides Titanic. What year did Titanic come out? 97 as well. Might be a toss-up. One of the two. Yeah, remember the shower scene? It was one of those scenes that, let's be honest, we all probably paused and whacked off to. Because it was just, again, this was a movie about, you know, relationships of the characters, maybe not, you know, love relationship, but the relationship of the characters finding themselves, again, being in this space army, killing bugs on another planet, and these boobies. I'll never forget these boobies. It was fantastic. But the game, all right, anyways, enough about Starship Troopers. If you know what Starship Troopers is, think of this game as Starship Troopers without the boobies, because nobody needs pointy boobies. If you need that in N64, go see Lara Croft. But one thing I liked about this game, which some people might not like, is there was no ammo, right? If you picked up a cool gun, you just use that gun. You didn't have to worry about finding ammo pads or conserving the ammo. Fuck that. You just unload. You pick a gun you like and you unload. The other cool part about it was you had three types of characters you could change from. And they each had these different abilities, kind of a Metroidvania type style where, you know, I think one of them could like kind of float when they jumped. One of them could swim. And the third one, I don't know. No, did? No. I don't know. Fly? No. I don't know. They could do something else. So you could go back to that area once you got that person's ability, and maybe, you know, you have to swim underwater now, and there's a tunnel you could go through, and it would open up to another area, which would then be like another planet. So you would actually fly to another planet. But the game was fantastic. It had so many things that it could do. There was a co-op mode, so you could play the story campaign together. It had the deathmatch mode, which is like every other game. It's a fun, fun game. And then it had these weird, amazing mini games. It had this mini game where it was essentially a racing game, but it was in the style of, let's say, F-Zero had a baby with Diddy Kong Racing, where it was like spaceships, you could collect items, it kind of had that fast-paced mode like to it. Again, just like something that you wouldn't expect in this game, yet it was there, and it was another great feature. In fact, Nintendo Power gave this game 9 out of 10. I mean, you gotta remember, Rare Studios aren't trying to put out too much of a garbage game. Jet Force Gemini, I don't know if I'd say a hidden gem, because it is Rare Studios, but it was a hidden gem for me. It was an amazing game. It's a fantastic game. If you've never seen it, go check out a trailer. Check out a playthrough it on YouTube or something. I, in fact, have this game. I popped it in the other day, and that's what she said. And it was fun. It still holds up. Again, it has that same issue with the controllers and stuff, but the game's fun. So number 4, Jet Force Gemini.
Number 3.
I mean, do I really need to say it, folks? No, I don't. But I will, because I'm on my top 10. GoldenEye. Again, Rare Studio. I mean, let me ask you this question. Is GoldenEye the best movie-to-video game ever made? Even to today, I stand by that game is perfect to the T from a story mode perspective and the details they got right. There was no bullshit back then with like copyrights and actor rights and all. No, they just fucking made the game based off the movie, and they did a fantastic job at that. In fact, they did such a good job, it really got me into the whole James Bond movies. I'm not gonna lie. You know, that was probably one of the first, GoldenEye was probably one of the first movies I seen from the Bond series, which made me go back and watch the older ones and then really get into all of them going forward. I thought the story mode was great. Again, pretty close on par to the movie. It was challenging. They had the other different objectives and agencies you could unlock. And then, I mean, do I even need to get into the diversity of the death matches and the different modes and the paintball mode and the big heads and the little body mode and whatever they had, you know, and then the weapons themselves you could change. I mean, I remember we did the proximity mine only matches, and there's nothing better than like putting a proximity mine underneath a walkway. And then a guy walking by, and you just watch them with the remote mines and, you know, slappers only and golden gun. I think we've all sat in front of this, the TV with our buddies. I go back to the preaching the co-op mode and, you know, back when the whole idea of cheating because you're looking at other people's screens came from. Those were the days, right? Stop fucking looking at my screen, dude. Man, I'm not. Well, how'd you know to do the remote mine? You know, it's like, those things make it so much more fun than sitting there personally and voice chatting. I mean, I would love to just get in the room with a lot of you guys on, you know, a lot of the listeners and just play these classic games. It'd be great. So, Dan, I don't know how much I need to say about it. We've all know this game is fantastic. We've all played it. Number three, GoldenEye.
Number two.
Oh, man, I fucking love this game. Rush 2 Extreme Racing USA by Atari Midway Games. Man, this was your classic arcade-style racing game. But I want to say, or ask the question again, was this game ahead of its time? And what I mean by that was, it had this open-world concept, right? So they had this thing you could call practice mode. And in practice mode, you could go into any track, and there was no other racers. You could actually do this with co-op, two people if you wanted to. And you had 999 seconds. And it was just a free roam. You could do whatever you want. And you said, well, what the fuck would I do? Like, it's a racing game. But that's where you're wrong. Because these tracks, I mentioned it a little bit about Adventure Beetle Racing, took it to a new level. These tracks had areas of the map that were only accessible in this practice mode. You wouldn't never go to these areas in an actual race or like a circuit style play. And the reason why you would want to go to these areas, which was every map had, I don't know, 12 tees, and it had 4 Mountain Dew cans. Yes, Mountain Dew cans. And they made some of these things amazing and so much fun to explore. You know, you could go into the subway and try to hit a jump to go onto a subway car and then drive that on top of the subway car to get a key that was, you know, close to the ceiling. Stuff like that. And then you had to find Mountain Dew cans that were scattered. There were some of them you had to find a way to go in an elevator and get to the top of these skyscrapers in the city. And then you had to jump from one skyscraper to the next to get to like the 10th skyscraper to find a Mountain Dew can. It just made it so much fun. I probably spent hundreds of hours in this game exploring and trying to get all the keys. And every time you got 4 keys, you unlocked a car. But the difference was is you only got the car for that track, right? I think the first one was like a hot rod, and you could get like a Formula One racing car. You could get, I don't remember. If you got the Mountain Dew car, all the Mountain Dew cans, all 4 of them, you unlocked like a Mountain Dew race car. It was like a drag racing Mountain Dew car. That's what it was, a drag racing car. But my point was, so you would want to play every map and unlock all of the keys and stuff, because then when you did your circuit modes or you had friends over and you played some races, you would have all the cars for each level, which made it so much more fun. But it doesn't even stop there, right? That was a lot of fun for the game. But where I probably spent even more hundreds of hours is what they called stunt mode. Because they had these stunt courses with tons of different styles of jumps and loops and half pipes and any type of weird, you know, stunt course you could think of. And again, you got a set amount of time, and it was head to head. You go against your competitor, you know, again, your couch co-op buddy, and just rack up points after points, doing flips, doing rolls, doing, you know, like barrel rolls, you name it. You could just do it in the car and you would just get your points racked up, and then you get multipliers. I don't know why. It probably shouldn't have been this fun, but it was amazing. And then the tracks themselves, you could race on Alcatraz. Alcatraz was a track. I think you had downtown San Francisco, the Las Vegas Strip, just tons of different areas like that, you know, that were kind of famous, but also just so much fun. Love, love, love this game. One of my favorite games of all time. I believe this was also an arcade-style game as well. You could go play it in the arcade and sit down and drive the car. So, again, number two was Rush 2 Extreme Racing USA.
And number one.
Comet Legends.
I mean, best game of all time? Best series of all time? I've mentioned this series so many times on this show. It might have been a no-brainer. You may have guessed it. Maybe not. Gauntlet Legends is the reason why I love dungeon crawling games today. Hands down, right? Reason I love games like Diablo. Reason I love hack and slash games, period. Reasons why I buy shit like Ages of Mages in hopes that it could somehow be relevant to the old school Gauntlet Legends. The day they stopped making Gauntlet Legends on the Nintendo system was an absolute fucking shame. And it still is a shame. And God help me, for someday I praise and pray and hope that it returns in some glorious form. But Gauntlet Legends is just the hack and slash by Atari Midway. It's perfect. It's perfect. I mean, I will say Gauntlet Legends Dark Legacy on the GameCube is better, but you gotta start somewhere. And this is all based on the original NES game, Gauntlet, right? It was so fun. And again, four-player co-op. I never played this game solo. My wife would play this game with me. My buddies, my friends, anybody would play this game with me because it was just so much fun. It was such an amazing exploration, and it rewarded you with exploration, which I loved. Different paths and hidden places, all that things. So the classes, got to start there, right? Got to start with the different types of characters. You're typical. It had a warrior, an archer, Valkyrie, and wizard. I was actually the warrior guy, believe it or not, because my buddy liked being the wizard. And I went with the archer. I went with the warrior. You needed someone to kind of take the brunt of the damage while someone else could sit back and take attacks. But when you had that strategy, it also was great because, throughout the map, you'd find potions and food. Yes, this is the game that would say, food is good, every time you picked up like a thing of bananas or meat. Or it would say, the warrior has leveled up. It was like this announcer's voice that just made it epic and fun and amazing. And then you also had these unlockable characters. So each class had like a alternate universe version of it, but it was stronger. So the warrior had like the Minotaur. The wizard had, I think it was like a jackal, right? In the Egyptian time, like the black cat looking jackal thing. And each one of those were very difficult to unlock. You'd have to find this extra bonus room in a level. And then even if you found it, it was usually towards the end of a level, you had to do a very hard mission within that bonus level. And these levels were long. They were like an hour long. So if you made it there and you failed, you had to go play the whole level again to get there. And that's if you knew where it was, right? This was before the internet. We weren't Googling where to find these things. We were legit exploring every inch of the map to find them. The amazing thing about these characters as well was they had a level up system all the way up to level 100. And every time you leveled up, you could, they had the typical strength and speed and, magic that you could up your stats in. And I believe those stats capped out at like 999. So the goal was, is you wanted to replay these levels, right? Because you replay levels, you upgrade, you level up, you upgrade your stats. Every time you did go back into a level, so once you beat a level, you could replay that level. And it was like a hardcore mode. They had all more enemies, more stuff to do. It was great. You could actually pick the color, and it was sophisticated enough to know, like, you have chose Red Warrior. They had the special attack, right? So you had to build up your special attack meter. You could do that. It was just so much fun. Just the rest of the characters themselves were a lot of fun. And we talked about the expansion pass a little bit earlier that allowed the game to increase its, megabyte RAM. This game utilized that, and it did it in a fabulous job where, again, you had zero frame rate issues. I could have four players playing at a time, tons of characters on the screen, enemies, and like no chugging along. It was just, they throw a lot at you and you could still get through it. It also had like an item slash shop you could buy and sell stuff that you picked up throughout. After each level, you could do that. It had pets. It had epic boss battles. I remember we would go fight like that, a dragon. We'd fight him 30 times. Because when you fight him, you get all these tokens that drop down when you kill him. And each token was like 10,000 experience points. So you would kill the dragon and then be like, all right, Drew, this time you're collecting all the tokens. Next time, John, you're going to collect all the tokens. And then you'd level up like 8 levels. And it was amazing. It also had like legendary items throughout the world. So if you found the legendary item, the boss would make it easier. Again, this game absolutely is my favorite of all time. I wish I could continue to play these games today to make them. I know they made a couple, I think, for the PlayStation or Xbox after the GameCube one, maybe one or two. I gotta be honest, I think the series fizzled out after that. I don't know. I gotta look up on it a little bit and see what happened to it, if it just died off or whatnot. I mean, maybe games like Diablo and other games kind of took over and indie companies could do something similar. But Gauntlet created, believe it or not, I believe Gauntlet Legends was a stepping stone for a lot of these styles of games. And it will ever hold a special place in my heart. A lot of memories with my buddies and friends. And even my wife, we played this game, the GameCube version of it. So that's my number one, Gauntlet Legends. And I think that is going to pretty much wrap up my top 10. I hope you guys enjoyed it. This was fun. I love reminiscing specifically about the N64. It is, I don't know if I'd say my favorite because GameCube is really close up there, but N64 does have a lot of memories. And the N64 is what really kicked off my love, I believe, for Nintendo. I truly believe that because, again, I always had an NES, but it wasn't mine. And this, I had a Sega, it was mine. But it's funny to see I had the Sega. It was my system. I could call it my own. And then when I had the Nintendo, I just realized how much more special and, you know, depth the Nintendo has over the Sega. And that's where I fell in love. So this really kicked off my whole lifestyle and love for Nintendo. So really hope you enjoyed this. Love to hear your feedback. Let me know what you guys, your favorite games are, or if you agree or disagree on anything. If you have any memories of these top 10 that I shared, you know, it's definitely the Rush 2. Not a lot of people played that one. Jet Force Gemini, not a lot of people played that one. Beetle Adventure Racing. I'd love to see if anyone else out there has played those games and agree with me on that. So again, that's all I got for now. Thanks for listening, everybody. Sadie, take us home.
The Dads After Dark Show is part of the Nintendo Dads family of podcasts. You can subscribe to us anywhere podcasts are available, including iTunes, CastBox, Spotify, and Stitcher. Also, don't forget to leave us a 5-star review. Pretty please? Be sure to join us on the Nintendo Dads Discord in our Dads After Dark channels for some naughty After Dark talk. Follow us on Twitter at NDadsAfterDark. Or email us at dadsafterdarkshow@gmail.com. And a big thank you to Family Jewels for our show's music. You rock. That's all for tonight. Good night, dads. Sweet dreams.